Do you have the Grim Reaper album pulled up, anybody?
Yeah, hang on.
No.
I closed it. Let me...
The album cover?
Yeah.
Is the album called Rock You to Hell?
Yeah. It looks like a big purple Skeletor with a Grim Reaper scythe is killing a pumpkin-headed knight
with
a stick that the guy's putting into himself. Or maybe he's pulling it out.
And then,
oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess they're in the pumpkin patch, but he's got a... And it's the middle of the day. It's a sunny day. There's no clouds. And he's got a fucking candle.
No, that's moonlight.
Huh?
That's moonlight.
Oh, you know this... I see on another picture, it does kind of look like the moon.
Yeah, this is like blue hour moonlight stuff.
That's a really bright candle.
I mean, yeah.
That's like a...
Well, the photographer's using a flash, obviously.
When a form of music that our children like becomes linked with ghoulish images and violent theatrics, it demands our attention. Hundreds of thousands of teenagers are locked onto so-called heavy metal music.
I grew up metalhead. I love 80s. Yeah! 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 80s metal, like Metallica. Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
What do you call this?
Well, this piece is called I Lick My Love Pump.
It's gonna be abrasive, it's gonna be sickening, it's gonna be hard to listen to, it's gonna be aggressive, and it's gonna fucking kick you in the fucking balls of the pussy.
So hey, welcome. Welcome to Somewhere in Time Podcast, episode 4.
Episode 4.
Yep. So I'm Eric. We got Tim over there.
Hi.
We got Joe over there.
What's happening?
And we're really excited to introduce this next person. Really excited to have him join us for this episode. Guitar player currently in the band Dress the Dead, and also from one of our favorite thrash bands from the Bay Area, Forbidden, Mr. Craig Lo Cicero.
Hey, you even pronounced it right. That's pretty pretty impressive.
We've been working on it all week.
Yeah, we did.
I've had to go over this so many times in live interviews. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how many different ways it's been mispronounced, but just imagine.
Yeah,
as many as you can. And then
yeah, we can imagine.
Yeah. I just tell people it's Cicero, but a little bit lower.
There you go.
It's Cicero tuned down a half step.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Or a full step in this case.
Yeah. So how you been, man? How you doing?
I'm doing really good. I'm in a current upswing. You know. It was an interesting year until a few months back. So, we can get into all that as we go. I don't need to like jump forward before we go backwards or whatever you guys want to talk about. I'm just here
to
talk metal.
Cool.
Yeah, man. Well, why don't you, I mean, we saw that you recently released a new video for, remind me the name of the song from Dress the Dead.
Promises and Kisses.
Promises and Kisses, which was produced by Rob Flynn, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
The story with this band is when my last band ended, I just went full steam ahead with not like forgetting about worrying about anything, forgetting about preconceptions, forgetting about what people would assume would be cool. Because I mean, I know how easy it would be for me just to go by the numbers and do exactly what everyone expects me to do and, you know, make a marginal career of doing it. And not being real stoked about it because it'd be like, you know, I've done that. I've already done that. I'm more into songwriting as of the last, you know, 20 years. And that's a different art form altogether than riff piling. You know, but although I will say Forbidden did write songs, it was a lot of work. And there was a great people I was writing with. It was extremely hard towards the end to get everybody on the same page and motivated and whatever. So, but I mean, to make a long story short, my band ended. I started, I had a dream and I woke up with the name Dress the Dead in my head. People are like, what does it mean? I'm like, I've actually got some different meanings in my head as to what it means, but I didn't know what I was doing at first. It just happened. And, I woke up, I'm like, those are three words that I've never heard put together. I've heard all of them and separately, you know, and there's lots of the bands and lots of dead bands.
Yeah.
Not many dressed bands, you know, but I thought, you know, well, I'm going to go with that. And I ran it out by Peter Dolving, who was going to be my singer at that time. And he's, oh, yeah, you know, Peter loves freaky things. He's like, oh, that's cool, you know. So, so we got really fired up about it and then started writing music. And I, before he even recorded a note, I'd told Rob what I was going to do. I said, yeah, man, check, you know, come on, check out a rehearsal. And Peter wasn't even in town. And I told him Peter was going to be our singer. He's like, oh, Peter. He's like, yeah, I know Peter. He's like, he's great, but he might flake out on you. You don't know what he's going to do. This is what he came preempted. And I'm like, I know Peter's history. I love Peter Dolving. I think it's worth a shot. I think it's worth a try. And I love, you know, everything about Peter to this day, even, you know, whatever people want to pick on his idiosyncrasies or say with negatively about, you know, whatever.
Is he in another band?
Before now? That?
Oh, well, no, before. Like, how did you find him or how did you know about him?
Yeah,
he was in The Haunted for years and years and years.
Yeah. He's got a really good voice, yeah.
Yeah, he's Swedish. He's Swedish. So I had a Swedish guy that was living in Denmark that I wanted to start my band with. Degree of difficulty is already like, but I like difficult if it's great. And I'm glad we used them. I'm glad we got into it and started that process. And Rob loved the music before he heard Peter singing it. And then I sent Rob some demos and he was a little skeptical. He's like, I don't know, man. He's kind of, you know, he's, but we had him come into town and we did two shows with Death Angel. And we did their Christmas shows. They invited us to do both of them. And, that was amazing, and we recorded Peter while he was in town, and it was just like it was truly inspirational. The entire experience was incredible. Two sold out shows. Everyone's like, "Wow, your band's fucking awesome." Some people knew who he was, some people didn't. You know, it was a really good vault. And after a couple of months, and things going really well, it scared Peter, and he got really nervous about. For whatever reasons he has, and I'm gonna have to say they're good for him. You know, I'm not gonna say anything negative about him because I really, really adore the guy. Mm-hmm. And but he just, you know, I asked for it, I got it. He wasn't equipped to think about jumping in and doing a record and touring and things like that again. Yeah. It just messed with his way of life he has right now, and he just doesn't have the stability. And left us in a situation where there's no one great that I'm familiar with that was available. And we went for months and, you know, had some pretty good auditions and people sending me stuff. And I'm like hiding most of it from the band because it just wasn't good enough. I'm like, I'm just not going to play this for them. It's just not, nothing wrong with these people, but they're just not right. And the bar was so high with Peter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fast forward to October of last year, I got a random text from Kayla Dixon, who plays Witch Mountain. And I saw Witch Mountain literally a year to the 2 days after that. I got one of those Facebook notices saying, you know, 1 year ago today. And it was when I went and saw them, and I wouldn't see the skull. Didn't even go to see St. Vitus. Not a huge St. Vitus fan, respect, but not, I went to see the skull, Eric Wagner. And I walked in and these, everyone's like, dude, you got to see this band. The singer is amazing. This girl's on stage and she's just blowing people's minds. I'm like, whatever. So I turn a corner and I look. I'm like, yeah, she sounds good. And then I'm like, she's really good. And then like literally within like 5 minutes, I'm like, that girl's going to be a huge star somewhere. I don't know if it's going to be with that band. I don't know if it's going to be something else, but she will be. And I had Peter Dolving. So I'm like, whatever.
Right. Doesn't matter. So
there's irony for you that she found us and she dwelled upon even trying out for us for a few months. And she was lucky and we were lucky that we didn't settle because everything was meant to be. And she's been a real breath of fresh air. People are completely floored by her out here. They're like, oh my God, we never had a female singer that's that talented in the Bay Area.
That's awesome.
That's at least involved in metal.
Yeah. Right. We've had
plenty of, you know, you want to go back to Grace Slick. That's great. But I mean, this girl, you know, she's like, you know, she's got, you know, Tina Turner and death metal in her back pocket.
I watched the video and I mean, does she come from a metal background, or is she mostly just like rock? Or
she's everything. She grew up loving everything. I think she was a total rebel. She's from your area. She's from DC originally.
Oh nice.
Yeah, and she moved to Portland to join Witch Mountain, and they had a great singer to begin with, another girl. And she had to come in and fill up those big shoes in that scene. It's a smaller world in the doom metal world, but
yeah,
it matters. And you have to have cred, you know, cred. So she had to earn her cred, and she did. And, you know, the end result is here I am today, and we are today with what I feel, and I really honestly feel this way, is the most talented up and coming singer. She's only 23. She just turned 23. You know, she's smart. She's got it all. She's an entertainer, you know?
Yeah.
But I just think that she's a great thing that's waiting to happen. And I feel like her and us and the way that she listens to me and the way we work together, something really good's going to arrive from that people have no clue. And the song Promises and Kisses is definitely very atmospheric. And that was something we wrote. Mm-hmm. I'd written music, and then Peter had wrote a melody, and we'd recorded it, but people weren't relating to it as much with Peter, and we didn't release it. Right. And she tried out with it. And it was just like goosebumps in the room as soon as she started singing. Female point of view, it just sounded way more fitting. There's nothing wrong with Peter's version, but just people couldn't relate as much.
Right.
But you know, the first song we released was all her and myself working. You know, that was all her lyrics with a few little things that, you know, the keys here and there. I've written a lot of lyrics in my life. Most of the Forbidden stuff was lyrics I'd written. So
okay.
You know, but that's the story of how we got here. And
it's
a good spot to be in. And I don't feel like we have to rush. I feel like I can finally take my time, and because it's going to come rather quickly. So I don't want to like make it come any quicker than it's going to, you know.
Right.
I mean, I know we're older, she's younger, but something great is something great. So
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of Forbidden, Tim, why don't you tell Craig how we discovered
So I was at Tower Records, and there was a VHS that said Ultimate Revenge 2. I knew of Ultimate Revenge 1. I didn't have Ultimate Revenge 1, but I saw 2, and I said, oh, look, okay, it says Bay Area Band Forbidden. And I thought, well, Bay Area, that's probably pretty good. And I didn't know any of the bands other than Raven, but, you know, Faith or Fear, Death, Dark Angel. So I was like, it's $20. This is my lawn mowing money. It's a big deal. Should I buy it? I don't know.
That's how I got turned on to most of my stuff, just so you know. Lawn mowing money was like my weekly trip to the record store.
Yes, exactly. Yep. That's what I was there. Tower Records. I was like, I got $20. Should I buy this or this? And I was like, I'm going with the VHS, Ultimate Revenge. So I took it home, and you guys were first, and it was like, oh, holy shit. I mean, I was like, I thought they'd be pretty good, but this is awesome. These guys are phenomenal.
How old were you then? How old are you now?
I was,
you don't have to tell me. Were you when it actually happened, you bought this? Like
it was brand new. Yeah. It was 88. So
88,
yeah, I think so. It was brand new, yeah. So I was in high school. Yeah, I'm 46 now, so.
Okay, well, I'm just in front of you because I was not even 19. I think I just turned 19 when we did it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So
tell when you look at the video, I'm like, you know.
Yeah, but you guys had the energy. You guys, it was insane. It was like it was almost like Battle of the Bands, and you guys came out and were like, you know what, we're gonna just destroy everybody.
Well, that's cool though. Do you want to continue, or should I jump in real quick?
Just that. Yeah. I mean, we bought basically all the stuff from all the bands on the thing, other than Raven. But
yeah, we weren't Raven fans.
Yeah, no offense to them, but we were looking for thrash.
They didn't fit that video. Yeah. It was like nothing but thrash. You know, Dark Angel, Death, and then Raven comes out. It's like, what? Like, oh, that doesn't.
They don't.
I don't know.
No offense to them. They were.
I know they're very influential. They're huge. Sure.
Very influential. But yeah. But to go back to your first thing, that was our first out of state show.
Okay.
We'd never done anything out of state. We did one.
Where was that recorded?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The boo capital of the world. But we didn't know any of this stuff. We didn't know anything. You know, Debbie Abano was our manager, and we get to Philadelphia, and the first thing she tells us is, I don't want you guys partying like everybody else. I want you guys focused. I want you guys, you know, everybody making sure that everything is, you know, on top of your game. And we're just like, okay. So we went and got some cheesesteaks, and we went to the hotel. And then the label guy calls her Debbie's room. He's like, hey, bring the guys up. We're all, you know, the guys in the bands are all in this room. So she brings us into a room, and there's like, the door opens, and it's Chuck. I knew Chuck when we were kids. He was a couple years older than me, maybe 3 years or so. And, you know, Def was just taking off, and I just heard Pull the Plug. I didn't hear the first album yet. I hadn't even heard it. We were label mates. But I didn't know any of these guys. And it was Death and Dark Angel in the room. No Faith or Fear. Nobody even knew who they were. All right. They didn't know who we were, except for like a few people that knew Bay Area stuff. So nobody really knew each other. But it's Chuck. He's like, dude, what's up? Because we passed around demos. You know, he just started Death and finished Mantis, and he moved to the Bay Area for a little while. Huh. And we hung out one night at Ruthie's Inn and passed demos around. And that was amazing. It was like, oh man, you know, the bro factor right there. And then I look, and there's guys from Death Angel or Dark Angel standing over by the window, looking out, like holding these things and dropping them. I'm like, what are you guys doing? And Gene looks at me. He's all, dropping piss balloons. I'm like, and then Debbie's all, no fucking way.
No fucking way. Best behavior.
You guys are not. I'm like, oh wow. And then the label's like, oh yeah, go ahead. Party, tear the room up, man. We don't care. We'll pay for it. It's all good stories. She's all, not my kids. So we were just like all, you know, kind of like locked in. And then we hung out and I bonded and we laughed and we did the show. And it was like, I brought one guitar. You see the stripe, the Eddie Van Halen guitar. That was the one. That was not mine. The black Kramer at the end was mine. But we didn't have a chance to get down there and change strings. So they're just like, get up on stage, check your stuff, you're on, you know? And like, first song. We did Off the Edge and broke a string. So next one we did, I believe, was As Good as Dead, and they handed me that guitar. They're like, we can't fix your string. We can't get it fixed yet. Here, take this. So, so what you see is me angry. I'm playing this Van Halen guitar, like, it sounded so tinny, and I was like, it was all wrong. Great guitar. I look back at it now. That's a great guitar. It was one of Glenn's guitars.
Okay.
Glenn was the shred guy. You know, we got him because he could play solos.
Right.
Didn't get him for any other reason. You know, the guy he took over for Rob Flynn, so we needed a guy who was better in our heads.
He did all those sweep arpeggios and all that.
He was great. I mean, I went to high school with Glenn, and he was like, he'd do breakdancing and shredding was his two things. Nice. So
he was breakdancing to metal.
Yeah, everyone.
He's the only guy breakdancing to metal, right?
He's just like you, Eric. So
yeah. Was your thing. Right. Just like me, right?
Sure. But what I'm getting to is what you were talking about. It's like we didn't know what we were doing. So all we used to do back in the Bay Area is, you know, compete because you had to, because everybody was so fucking good. And Violence was our main competition.
Yeah, Violence I thought was, so. You
know, oh, okay.
Rob went from Forbidden Evil to Violence. And then we just all just, and now we're all super tight and close. Right. And back then it was like drama and, you know, drinking, you know, so.
How much of that was real, and how much of it was it all like? I mean, you were really pissed at each other,
or was like
it
just pro wrestling, man? We were all mad at each other. When Rob, there's so many side stories to this, but
I'm sure
before Rob joined Violence, the old singer and the drummer Perry tried to recruit me a month earlier. And they came to my house. My mom still remembers when those two guys from that band showed up. I didn't even know they knew where I lived. And they were like, yeah, man, you know, we want you to join Violence. I'm like, why do you want good? Like, I'm into metal. You guys are like punk rock kind of thing. And, like, I loved them, but I was like, nah, well, you didn't ask Rob. He's not Violence material. And then they got him in Violence. And then that's when my kid resentment came in. And then, you know, this, all that stuff that we had between us, it was like, grr, you know, and it's so childish. And I have these lessons for my son. If he ever gets in these things, I could like tell him, don't be like this, or don't do that. Or,
you know,
but although I wouldn't trade any of it, because it did make the competitive juices flow for all of us. And we all just were on fire.
You were paving new ground. It was insane.
Yeah. Well, also, I think it would, correct me if I'm wrong, but it probably would make you a better songwriter too, because it makes you want to work that much harder to write like a better song than that band. You know what I mean? Like, you're just working hard to write the next best metal song that you can.
You know what I mean? You know, when Forbidden Evil started, Rob was really the main songwriter, because I was 15 and 17, and he was like advanced. And we have this conversation. Like, he set a template for me, because he wrote, you know, most of the Chalice of Blood. Like, that was his thing. And we sped it. Once he left, we sped it up. We made it fast. We did extra stuff. But still, like, he, you know, it was a slow version. It was still cool, but that was a high bar to set back then. Yeah. He was advanced, and Rob still is advanced, and now he's the hardest working dude in metal. I don't think there's anyone hard. I can't. If you guys can point out one guy who works harder than him right now, I'd be beg to differ.
No, he's.
They're out there doing 3 hours a night. You know.
Yeah. Machine Head's amazing. We saw them a couple years ago, and we got a chance to meet them, and they were all super cool guys.
Yeah,
they're really, really easy to talk to.
And, you know, I give a lot of the. You know, they're always been cool guys, but I think that Jared makes them even more humble, because his just energy that he brings to it is just, he's a musician. So they are all musicians at this point. We were all kids. We were all cocky. We all had big heads at one point. All of us probably, I don't know Jared, but all those guys, us, you know, everybody. But now we're, you know, the testosterone's died down a little bit. You know? Honestly, I mean, it's just not the same as it used to be for all of us. So we're all smarter. But well, I think songwriting is, you're either born with it or you're not. And luckily I have that songwriting chip in my head. I have that thing that works for me.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, we were talking about this the other day about bands, and what I respect most is a good songwriter. Like,
absolutely.
Between Tim and I, our favorite band is Metallica. And, you know, we stick behind them through everything, like through Shane Anger, through all that shit. Like, but it's a lot of it for me is because James Hetfield's amazing. I think he and Lars are amazing songwriters.
Yeah.
I think they have written some of the most amazing songs. And I look back and say, if I'm going to look at bands and say, okay, well, they wrote some really fast fucking shit, but these guys over here wrote some really amazing songs that, like, I felt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what stood up about Forbidden immediately. It was like, holy shit, these songs are really good.
Yeah.
It wasn't just fast or fast take. It was like, these songs are really, really good.
Well, you know, that was an advantage of having Russ Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, once, you know, you get some special people in one band, you know, I could always look at Russ and say, you could do anything, you know, like Russ, you could do anything. Yeah. Let's just do anything. And then when we'd come up with stuff, you know, you could challenge him and he'd rise to the occasion. Once we got Paul Bostaff in the band, same thing. Paul was not a thrash metal drummer. When we met him, he really hadn't heard anything. He, you know, I was the first guy to play him Slayer, you know.
Wow, that's fun.
You know, I mean,
how did it go?
Yeah, he's 2 years older too, you know. Like, I was the youngest guy in the band and writing the songs at the time, and that caused a lot of weird stuff too, but
yeah,
you know, but we just all clicked, you know. Matt had his part, you know, everybody did their part, and Glenn was great at shredding, you know, that worked for the first album. And then, but once we got Tim Calvert involved, that became everything became better, because Tim was more organized and more refined and more of a songwriter.
Yeah, the jump between the first and second albums is wow.
it was a wow jump. And if we would have had another couple months, we could have wrote more songs, but it was like everything at that time was moving so quickly.
Yeah. It was phenomenal regardless. That album is amazing.
Yeah. Tim brought in more melodic stuff. So, you know, when we worked together, that was my best guitar duo, you know, that I've ever got to work with. for a long extended time. Tim and I together, he made me get a lot better. I didn't really get feeling in my playing until I played with Tim. I was just fast and hyper all the time.
I could see that with that album. There's a lot of melodies and a lot of just things flowing and moving together and more moving parts. It's just, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's when I realized that I don't want to play fast solos. I'm not trying to. I'll let the other guy do that. And I'll just write the melodic stuff and I'll write the songs and lyrics and stuff like that, you know.
And again, that I think those are the things that stick with me anyway. Like I Dave Mustaine is one of the best shredding guitar players out there, but I go to a lot of Kirk Hammett solos only because those are the solos I can hum. Those are the solos that I can actually remember. And like the Sanitarium solo, I can actually, it's got a melody to it. Not saying anything bad about Dave. He's written some awesome solos too, but it's just for me, I like the ones that are more melodic, and that's, kind of lends to what you're saying, Craig. So
it's apples and oranges there, or, even apples and kiwis. Thank you. I just think Dave, looking back at it, whatever resentment anybody has against Dave for being Dave, because resentment can rise quickly. But at the end of that whole, whatever you think, is the reality that guy is the main originator of thrash metal. Really?
Yeah.
Sorry. There's nobody else. We could talk about all who influenced who, but who actually was writing thrash songs? He set the template for Metallica.
He was there. Yeah, he was.
Well, he wasn't just there, dude. He wrote the majority of everything that you like. If you love Metallica, he wrote 90% of that first record, and he wrote a good portion of Ride Lightning.
Yeah.
And, he just was a genius. And angry, and he had to have that extra anger to really push you into true thrash, aficionado. He was something else, man.
I don't really know him. I've only
talked to him a couple times. I have mucho respect for that guy.
Yeah, sure. I would disagree with Eric. I think Mustaine solos I like better than Kirk Hammett. If you had to pick one
better,
as far as stuff that I remember,
I think you both got good points.
It's hard to split hair. You're splitting hairs there.
Yeah.
I mean, both are huge influences on me as a guitar player. I mean, my biggest influences are like Dimebag. For me, Dimebag is like up here, and then everyone else is down here. Only because he was like the riff master. Plus, he wrote melodic solos. Plus, he could shred. Like, he was all in one package.
Yes, so, I agree. Well, Dimebag had this hand, which is the right, your left, and this hand.
Yep.
He could do, his right hand was so insane.
Yep.
He was the most put together overall guy, The guys that are behind him, there's not many that could do both as good as he could. That's why people think Zach is so good, but I've never heard Zach pick like Dimebag.
No
many guys that, I got more of this hand than this one.
Right.
The right of the lefties.
So, Craig, you were talking about back when Twisted and Foreign came out. I don't know if it was earlier than that, but there was so much metal coming out of that scene. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the other day. We were wondering, we think Twisted and Deform is, that's for us one of the best thrash metal albums.
Oh yeah.
And we think that could have been a lot bigger, maybe, if there wasn't so much.
If it was so saturated.
Maybe there was oversaturation. Do you feel that coming from that scene? Or,
well, one of the things that keeps me going and not being jaded is just the fact that I don't dwell upon what could have been as much. And
sure,
I see a lot of left hand paths where there could have been right in our career, and there's a lot of things. But it wasn't just us. There was a number of things going on at that time. And, when Testament was leading the charge by doing Practice What You Preach, and they did it incredibly fast, they wrote it so fast, the label's like, you guys need to do the same thing. You guys need to, hurry up and write another record. So our cycle for Twisted Into Form was not even close to being where it completed. And Combat was like, get in the studio, get in it now. So what we did do is we dragged our feet and got ourselves off the label. And instead of doing their model, you know, we wanted more money. We were going to get more money. We had a lot more money on the table from other labels. And, you know, we believed that we were the next up. We were on tour with Death Angel. We were doing really good. We sold a couple hundred thousand records.
Yeah.
You know, at that time was like, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were on our way, back page of every magazine.
Yeah.
Twisted
yeah.
in form, back page, yeah. you know, like it was
I remember, yeah.
So
Metal Edge and all that.
We were a little more convinced in ourselves than maybe we should have been. We should have been a little bit more humble and hungry in the moment. And our manager, Debbie, would always tell us that. So then we end up firing her because, see, here's another thing. This is another piece of history if you didn't know this.
Okay.
We found out much, much later after, I think we were on tour for Twisted in the Form, that Rick Rubin had approached us and he approached her and he wanted to buy Forbidden off of Combat and bring it over to Deaf American.
Oh,
Deaf Jam, wow, okay. Deaf Jam at that time.
Wow.
And she was like, no, they're not ready. It wasn't our abilities. It was our heads. She just knew that we were, you know, I was very cocky. I mean, I wasn't the only one. We all thought we were pretty good. And that's an ability you have to have in this business. But Debbie was like our mom too.
Yeah.
She was like her mom and she kept us in check, but we didn't find this out for months. And then one day when she was mad at us, I told Rick Rubin, no, we're like, what? And you could imagine the egos on these kids and hearing this, it's like,
yeah,
you know, Twisted in a Form would have been a completely different album, but you love it the way it is. So it was the way it was meant to be.
Yeah.
That kind of shit got in our heads and that kind of shit crept into our thinking. And it corrupted what was a good thing. And, you know, we got a split from Debbie, then we got off the label, then we were negotiating with big, big labels. We almost had a huge deal with RCA. And this is literally true. And if you haven't heard this before, but we were about to sign a really big deal with RCA Records, and then Nirvana put out Nevermind.
Oh,
and
it got
really big. And then Paul quit. Oh. All in the same, like, maybe 2-week period, and he joined Slayer. Then we're just like, whoa. Then we had to find a drummer, and we did. And then RCA is looking at us like, yeah, you guys are cool. Yeah. But, you know.
You're not grunge.
Yeah, you're not really doing what I get. Because we were extremely musical at this point. We were so melodic. And the demos, if you ever heard the demos we did, they were so advanced over even Twisted in the Form.
Huh.
Reserve.
I don't know if I've heard that. Have you heard that, Tim?
No, I've not.
Pulled back, and they're all over the. You can find trap demos. They're bad. They're bad versions of them. Cassette, you know.
Yeah.
But we had evolved again. We took a gigantic leap, but that leap was like is too clean and too clinical for what was happening at the time. It was too much musicianship, too many intricate parts, too many. Too much. And at that time, you know, it wasn't going to work out for us naturally because we took a detour. So we kind of missed our window in that time period, and very few bands stuck. Pantera came out of nowhere, but they were, you know what they were before that. I mean, they were a glam band, you know?
Right.
You know, Phil Anselmo's still overcompensating, like to this day for what he I got a ton of respect for him too, but that's all. Running from the past type of stuff. And you know, I mean, everybody's things changed, man. And only a few bands really, you know, survived. You could really say Slayer survived and Pantera survived. And then new things were coming up and then Sepultura came on and, you know, but there wasn't much that was really heavy that was going to dominate.
At least it was good music that sort of wiped out good music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I agree with that. And I knew that at the time. And I wasn't one that was like, oh, fuck grunge. Because first of all, I didn't think it was grunge. I said, oh, this is just hard rock.
Yeah,
it is. Like, yeah,
the new version of hard rock. I'm a classic rock guy. Before I was into like Venom, you know, I was still into Judas Priest and AC/DC and all that stuff. So when I heard this new, I mean, I heard Louder Than Love in 1989, Foundation Forum. It was in a cassette bag or a big bag, and it was a cassette. But that one cleared the palate for me, you know. And then when I was like, wow, this is this Middle Eastern vibe, this thing, this speaks to me, this is cool. And then I heard Facelift, when we were out on tour with Death Angel, our guitar tech for Death Angel had an advanced copy, and he was playing it backstage in Atlanta. And I was like, what's this? And I just remember tuning in. I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
And the guys in Death Angel are like, this is great. And a couple of the guys in Forbidden were like, this is great. But a couple guys didn't get it in Forbidden. Yeah. And it took them a little bit longer, you know? So to me, I just never resisted change, but I didn't try to roll with it. I just figured, you know, learn from what's going on around you and just do what you do.
Yeah. Makes sense.
The first time I ever heard Forbidden was on Hard and Heavy. Was that what it's called? Or Metalhead? One of those.
Number one?
Hard and Heavy.
One? Yeah.
That's me on the intro.
Yeah, it was the one after Twisted Into Form. So.
Oh, okay. That's later. Because I'm in the intro.
I saw the other one later, but yeah.
The plant and the beard.
Oh, yeah. I have that. Yeah. I know you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. So that whole stage thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're going to give me beer? All right.
Yeah.
I think Matt Camacho was maybe a little, I mean, I don't know him, but he looked like he was having a good time.
Oh, yeah. We all, Matt always had a good time. He was a professional good time haver. Yeah. Still is.
That's cool.
All grown up version of it. Yeah.
So are you still in touch with everybody from Forbidden? Are you guys still
closer? You know what? No. Matt, yes. Paul, yes. Tim doesn't talk to really anybody very much. Not, I mean, he does. There's a few old friends he talks to, but when he dipped out to become a pilot, he just kind of closed the circle up to people.
Yeah.
But, you know, Russ, when Forbidden, we never officially broke up. You know, it's just that it was just ending unceremoniously on a flight back from Chile, you know, where it just wasn't going to go the way I wanted it to. He wasn't really going to work hard enough to make Russ the best Russ he could be. Yeah. And I can't blame him I don't blame people. You know, they get to a point in your life, it was a lot of hard work for him that he wasn't into. And if you don't do that, then you aren't going to earn the money that you think you deserve. You know, you got to earn that money by putting one foot in front of the other and blowing people's minds. And, you know, you saw Death Angel do it again, and they're getting to a point. Testament took big, big jumps, and they're going to Exodus. Mm-hmm. It's just, he wasn't willing to do that. So I decided I'm not going to push him up the hill anymore. And, you know, and then he reached out to me. He did, you know, say maybe we should do something a few years ago. And I just said, no, I don't think so. But, you know, I never say never. Just to get together and jamming, maybe doing a show or something. I mean, what are we coming up on? It's 30 years of Forbidden Evil.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, which is why we're doing a lot of these. It's the 30th anniversary for all these albums.
I can't fucking believe that. You know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, crazy. I saw a list on Loudwire of all, it's like the best top 10 albums from 88. I was looking at that list going, holy shit.
There's
some amazing albums that came out in 88.
Something. A lot of good albums that came out. I believe Operation Mindcrime came out in 88 too.
Yep. We did a little thing on that in episode 3 also.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
Tons of good endless stuff.
I mean, the golden age of metal was definitely 1980 to 1990.
Things,
it's a decade.
You had a decade, which is a good run. And then it came back, you know, and I think it's back now. I just think your avenues for making a career out of it are really dwindled unless you know how to work the digital download aspect and the publishing aspect and movies. And
it's just totally different.
It is totally different, but it's not impossible.
But right.
You can't depend as much on the things that you used to depend on. You know, there's unlimited tour support and there's not unlimited advertising. It's everything's always recoupable. You know,
Well, I mean, there is a lot of good metal coming. I mean, Machine Head is putting out great stuff. I know they've been around for a long time, but their new album is really great. Ghost is one of our favorite bands. Yeah.
Me too. I love Ghost. That's good songwriting right there. So
exactly.
Songwriting angle. It's great. I really love it.
Yep. Ghost is
really good. I love him because it turns out to be just him after all, doesn't it?
Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we'll find out the next album.
He is.
That's right.
I'm a little bit worried because there was a Danzig did the same kind of thing. Like he put out four really good albums
with, with the same lineup. Yeah,
fired all of his musicians and
This hasn't been the same lineup.
Yeah, this hasn't been the same lineup. There's been
I guess you're like right.
One guitar player, I believe, that was there throughout the whole thing.
Yeah,
and the guy was good. You know.
Yeah. And his solo bands, or not solo band, but his other bands are really good too. I can't remember the name right now, but they're really good too.
You know, my old management company, because I was in a band called Man Made God. I ended up working with Rick Rubin. I ended up doing an album with it. It was a rock and roll thing. It was heavy, but it was rock and roll, you know. But we ended up working together, and Rick Sales Management was the management company. They got Slayer now. Mm-hmm. They've had Slayer. They had Slayer to begin with. But now they got Gojira, Ghost, and Mastodon.
It's
like the three best metal bands out now, pretty much.
To me, they're like, they are.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm really happy for them. And I'm really happy for our girl, Kristen Mulderig, that managed us our day-to-day, because she gets to handle Ghost. So I'm like, yeah, cool, you know.
That's awesome.
You never know how that stuff all works out, you know.
Yeah. What were you guys listening to when you wrote Green? Because that is like a pissed off album. And
we were pissed. You know, I was listening to at that time, and this is going to sound really strange and out of left field to you, but I was listening to a lot of Radiohead. At the same time, I was, you know, just absorbing everything around me, and there's a lot of conspiracy stuff going on in my head, you know, for the distortion as well. There's a lot of, like, you know, interplay between, you know, whatever, government, aliens, whatever. It was all happening. But I was listening to something that was completely different. I was really into The Bends, and which is that second Radiohead album. Mm-hmm. It didn't really reflect upon the music, but
no. It doesn't sound like a Radiohead album at all.
It didn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a song there's the Madden song on there too.
Oh, you can relate to Madden.
Yeah.
Well, we love Madden. That was our game. That was Madden competitions every weekend. So yeah.
I used to do tournaments. I used to go in.
Yes. Yep.
I don't really have time for that shit anymore. Really play. I think I was pretty good. People would come into the studio and they'd see me playing, you know, Sega, and they'd be like, you know, they'd challenge me or whatever. I challenged them, and very rarely did anyone walk out with their ass, you know.
They were cheats in that game, and people would cheat and not tell you that they knew the cheat. And then
like blocking the field goal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blocking the,
that was a cheat.
Oh, you didn't know about that? Like, no. And now I lost. Thanks.
That was a later version. I think it was PlayStation 96 or 95. Man. Yeah, because that was when we don't need to talk about that. But yeah, that was something I was into that. You know.
Yeah.
We were extremely angry at the time because at that point, like, we were kind of jaded. And all of us were like, fuck, man. Because we had just toured Europe and toured the States. We did Testament and Malevolent Clarification in the States. Everything was kind of going our way. And the label wasn't really understanding, like, the new demos we were sending them. Or they didn't get it. See, I'll just fast forward to this. That whatever, nothing for nothing, that album seemed to make more of an impact on people later than it did at the time that it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Years later.
Yeah,
you know, and I use the example that I've been approached by different guys from different bands, big bands, that have all used Green as like a reference point for them. Yeah, like you know, you go Lamb of God, you know, Slipknot, you know, Shadows Fall, you know, these bands that were coming up in the early 2000s were using Green as one of their reference points, and you could hear that little bit of influence in it. And people are like, you guys were influenced by all this other stuff and Pantera. I'm like, yeah, kind of. But more so, we're just like, let's just write a really angry record, you know? Like,
It was definitely pissed.
Let's just take out all this. We were fighting amongst ourselves, and everyone's just started to do. You know, we went through 4 years where we really didn't have a record deal, and then we had one, and it was cool, but your label's still not quite, they're German, and they don't quite comprehend this, you know? So there was a lot of, like, just frustration, and are we being handled correctly again? Are we in the wrong place again? Yeah, I see it all clearly now.
Well, I didn't hear any Pantera in Green. Like, when I listen to it, I don't hear any, I hear really fucking pissed off, heavy Forbidden.
We did tune down. I was listening to Sabbath. I got more back into Sabbath again.
Okay.
I was listening to a lot of Bloody Sabbath and Sabotage at that time.
So what are you tuned to on that album?
I think we're straight C sharp, and then a couple songs we dropped it.
Oh wow, okay.
Like I said, Sabbath, so that was mostly C sharp on those other albums.
Yeah, okay.
So Tim and I were both like really into that, and the funny thing about Green for Tim is that was one that he didn't quite relate to as much when it was happening. He felt like it was too angry. It was too. Tim's more like traditional and mm-hmm. Epic, and he wrote some amazing stuff on Distortion, and we had a little different thing going there, and I think that was more in tune with who he was. We used to call him Tim's Reich because he loved Tim's Reich. and that was not there on Green at all.
I know. No.
All the rigidness was like thrown away for Raw, and it was Raw on purpose. So, but I don't know how he feels about it now, but I think he did some great solos on that record. Not as many. We didn't do as many solos. There are some key. We took some cues from the outside world, We weren't being mm-hmm. so self-indulgent, and I don't know if it paid off or not. I don't think so. I just think it was a good record. I don't think there was any kind of reward for it, though.
So what happens? What happened with your Nuclear Blast deal with Omega Wave? Was there did they expect more stuff from you, or does that just sort of get
they
wiped away?
They still expect more stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
We're still on until further notice. They're holding out hope that we just decide, and they've been really, really supportive. I got nothing but love for that label, and I think they're the best. I think they are the best, and I just don't want to do a watered-down version of Forbidden. I don't want to do a thing where it's Craig's Forbidden.
Right. Like,
if it's not Russ and me, I'm not into it.
And well, who has the master tapes for the first few albums?
I'm sitting next to one of them right now.
Okay. Could there be like a remaster or a...
We could take Twisted in a Form and redo it again.
Yeah.
You have to bake the tapes, as they say, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That with them. They're sitting on three covers that we recorded after Omega Wave. We did Children of the Sea, Remember Tomorrow by Maiden, and and Knowledge by Operation Ivy.
That's
made them ripping. Like they're fucking awesome. All three of them turned out incredible.
Awesome.
I want to put them out, but their hope is that we put it out with a new thing.
Wow. Yeah.
I wouldn't hold my breath for that. So that's why that sits in limbo. That shit should already be out. And we also recorded some stuff from the Prague Fest or whatever it is. Prague Power. Mm-hmm. Prague Power. Gene Hoagland playing drums with us.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
We have some live
extra dull bass.
We have stuff. And we have those demos, those past demos. We could definitely release stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would rather do it through Nuclear Blast anywhere else, but it's really not like a big priority to me.
That that would be weird right now with what you're doing.
Just as an aside, Gene Hoagland, does he listen to a song once and he's like, got it? Like what?
Hoagland.
Hoagland.
Oh, Hoagland. Sorry.
Hoagland. Yeah. Gene... He can do that. I've seen him do it with other people. Gene said he's never had physical ailments except for when he played with Forbidden.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, like things would hurt. And
you wear that as a badge of honor?
It is.
Yeah, because not to say it's the hardest thing in the world to play, but it, as far as thrash metal goes, I think it was probably the hardest thrash metal to play.
It's very technical.
Yeah, it's devil's in the little details, and there's things that he'd be listening and go, I didn't even know that was there.
Yeah.
Little things, and he's a big, he's Paul fan, but he's a real big Steve Jacobs fan.
Oh, okay.
Real big Steve Jacobs fan. He thought Steve was just, and I think Steve's way underrated and fucking amazing too. Paul's amazing too. I mean, we had nothing but great drummers. We were very fortunate. Mark Hernandez. That's
for sure. Yeah.
Fucking amazing. I get to play with him, every practice. I still play with Mark Hernandez. So
that's awesome.
I've been very fortunate. And Sasha Horn was great. And he would have been amazing if we were to record an album with him. He was doing some incredible stuff. But, I challenge drummers, man. That's my stuff too. Our first drummer wanted to throw sticks at me all the time.
You know, but, how am I supposed to play drums to that? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, his cousins, Paul ended up showing him how to play Chalice of Blood the right way. Oh, wow. That's how he got in the band.
Ah, nice.
And there was a lot of resentment there too. Rob and I will have a good laugh about that. He's like, yeah, dude, Pittman was like so mad. He's like, you couldn't be mad at me because I knew him in high school. So he's mad at you. But yeah, I've always challenged drummers. Paul and I used to butt heads a lot, you know, and that was a big thing for us. Like, he'd be like, dude, slow down, you know, let me think about this. And I'd be like, no, do it. And with Gene's, like, that didn't take very long. Like, you know, but we never wrote together. Gene, that's one thing we talk about a lot. It's like, fuck, the opportunity just never arises for Gene and I to sit down and write. And I really do want to write an album with him, but that'll be something different. Yeah, that might be something we just write in like a week, and you know, like do an SOD type thing, and just like.
But he plays guitar too, right, Gene?
Yeah, he's good at everything. His girlfriend's a shredder too.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Nice. She's fucking rad. They have a band. They have something they're doing. I told them if they need me to play some guitar on that, I'll send one of them to help them out.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we saw Gene on that same. Ultimate Revenge 2, Dave. We're like, who's that drummer? Much bigger Gene. Much bigger Gene.
Yeah, but and we noticed his playing style too.
Like, yeah, he's like,
he didn't move. He's just like,
yeah, yeah.
Well, he's like, still. Dude. He's interesting because Gene doesn't, you know, with the forbidden stuff, he once in a while he'd have to cross hands, and he doesn't like to do that.
Yeah,
he's got everything worked out, so two hats or whatever, and
yeah,
he can just kind of, you know, turn himself just a little bit and do. And it's incredible because the four quadrants of his mind work
insane.
In such a way it's different than anybody else.
It's
he's the most unique drummer I've ever played with, or anyone that's played with him has ever played with. Because, you know, he's just, first of all, he's a certifiable genius. He's born that way. Might have lost a little bit over the years, but I haven't seen it. You know, it's like Gene is like literally his father was a genius, aviation genius. So he's just got a different. He operates on a higher place, but never judges people from where he sits.
He's not a
dick.
That's good. At
all. He's very.
Yeah, he seems pretty genuine. Every time I've seen him in interviews or just anything, he seems really genuine. Just like a good dude. Yeah.
He's like my family. Like Gene and I are probably tighter friends, closer than any other musicians that I've you know played with. We never wrote together. Maybe that's why. I don't know. It's hard to say.
All right, so this is the end of part one of our discussion with Craig LoCicero from Forbidden. There's more to come. Check out the part two that'll be coming up in a few days on Somewhere in Time podcast. You can find us on social media. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/somewhereintimepodcast. Our Twitter handle is @SITMusicPodcast. And on Instagram, it's instagram.com/somewhereintimepodcast. Dress the Dead, you can find at dressthedead.com. And they also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/dressthedead. All right, stay tuned for part two. See ya.
Energy, aggression, power.
To sum it up, it's a
vulgar display of power.
Metal and certain other forms of rock give teenagers something to believe in that they get no place else.
The human element of making music is what's most important. Singing into a microphone and learning to play an instrument, that's the most important thing.